Blog Talk Radio.
In the desert, we're here to preach, teach, and proclaim and speak hope and freedom to Iran. This is The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I am your host, Randy L. Noble. So very glad that once again you've taken a bite out of your time this morning to spend it with me here on the broadcast. I appreciate that so very much. It is Monday, November 5th, and the holiday season is fast approaching all of us, from Thanksgiving to Christmas. Winter is beginning to set in. Things are changing everywhere. And this morning, I want to talk to you about a very, very volatile, serious, life-threatening situation for a woman that all of us collectively have been praying for very many, many, many many years. Her name is Asiya Bibi, and she has been in jail in Pakistan since June of 2009. The reason why she was put in jail and arrested was that she drank out of the water cup of her Muslim co-workers. She was working in the fields with them. And as a result, they became very enraged at her. How dare you drink out of our water cup? You're a Christian. We're a Muslim. You've contaminated our water. You're unclean. And so an argument ensued from there. And Asia mentioned, well, I serve a living Savior, Jesus Christ. And Muhammad is dead in the grave. Jesus is alive. And as a result of that, her co-workers got enraged and pounced upon her and began to fight with her and physically abuse her. And they claim that she insulted the Prophet Muhammad and that she had said something derogatory about him, and she was arrested, and she has been imprisoned in Pakistan on death row since June of 2009. The American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow, many organizations have been so involved in doing everything they can to secure her release. Millions of us have been praying year after year. Finally, just a week ago, the Pakistani Supreme Court announced that Asiya was going to be acquitted from all charges and set free. All of us rejoiced. What an amazing answer to prayer after all of this long, hard work with Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice, many groups. Asiya was now free. However, things have dramatically changed. The Muslim crowd that wanted her put to death because of the blasphemy law. Understand something. In Pakistan, they have something called the blasphemy law, excuse me, which they use against each other for their own means and motives. The blasphemy law basically says that if you do something, let's say physically burn the Quran, you can be in jail for the rest of your life. If you insult the Prophet Muhammad, you can be put to death. And it's used against other people because they don't like them, against Christians because they hate them. They will find every way they can to implement the use of this blasphemy law. Well, many of the administrative people in government there in Pakistan have been trying to do something about this law. And whenever they would try to do something, they were threatened with death. Even some were assassinated for trying to intervene on Asiya's case or to do something about the blasphemy law. So there has been tremendous pressure, and especially after this verdict that came last week that Asiya Bibi was going to be free, and she had been acquitted. Well, now the news coming out of Pakistan, the latest news that I have, is Asiya Bibi's release delayed. Supreme Court to review acquittal decision as Muslims protest. So the angry mobs in Pakistan have seemed to find a way to define what the law is. No matter what the law says, no matter what the Pakistani Supreme Court says, they have decided that's unacceptable. What I want to do right now is to read to you a story from the Christian Post and let you understand what is happening right now. Asiya Bibi's life is in immediate cataclysmic danger, both her and her family. And so what I want to do, while we've been rejoicing, we need to continue to pray for this brave, courageous Christian woman. The release of imprisoned Christian mother Asiya Bibi has been delayed as the Pakistan Supreme Court will have to review its decision to acquit the farm laborer of blasphemy charges after signing an agreement with a radical Muslim group. Powered by Tehrik-i-Tahrir and other extremist parties, thousands of radical Muslims have protested nationwide since the Pakistan Supreme Court acquitted Bibi just last Wednesday. The protests and sit-ins have grown and led to disruption of cell service and school closures in some cities. It was reported by her family on Thursday that Asiya was expected to be released and allowed to leave the country Thursday night after spending 8 years on death row for blasphemy accusations that she denies. But according to the Associated Press, an agreement was struck Friday between the Pakistan government and Tehrik-i-Tahrir party, which staunchly supports the nation's controversial blasphemy laws, and was founded out of a support for a man who was convicted of killing a Pakistani politician who sought blasphemy reform. Federal Minister for Religious Affairs and Interfaith Harmony, Nooruk Haq Qadri, who signed the agreement, announced that Bibi won't be allowed to leave Pakistan until the Supreme Court makes a final review of its verdict. In exchange, the TLP will call off their protests. Pakistan's Dawn News TV reports that the government agreed to initiate the legal process to place Bibi on the exit control list. Placing Asiya Bibi on the ELC or the ECL is like signing her death warrant. Wilson Chowdhury, chairman of the British Pakistani Christian Association, told The Guardian. The agreement comes as the lawyer for the Muslim complainant who accused Bibi of blasphemy filed a petition for review of the Supreme Court decision on Thursday. The government said it won't oppose the request for Supreme Court review. Additionally, the government reportedly agreed to release people who were arrested during the protests against the Supreme Court's decision. The TLP agreed to apologize for the fact that its protest, quote, might have hurt the sentiments or inconvenienced anyone without reason. In addition to Qadri, the agreement was signed by Punjab Law Minister Raja Basharat. On behalf of TLP, the agreement was signed by leader Muhammad Asfaw Qadri, who earlier this week had called for the death of the three Supreme Court justices involved in Bibi's acquittal. The agreement was also signed by fellow TLP leader Muhammad Wahid Noor. According to the Associated Press, Pakistan's Supreme Court isn't known to reverse its decisions. However, court reviews can take years to settle, which could mean that Bibi might spend years more in prison. In prison, Bibi's life has been in danger. On Thursday, Pakistani authorities revealed they arrested two prisoners last month for plotting to kill Bibi. If she's released, activists say Bibi would need to be granted asylum in a foreign country because of the number of radical Muslims who want her dead in Pakistan. Spain and France have reportedly offered the mother asylum, according to Bibi's family. The BPCA, a London-based charity, has launched a petition calling on Western governments to offer asylum to Bibi and members of her family. Chowdhury has been in contact with Bibi's husband, Ashiq Masih. Chowdhury reports that if Bibi and Masih are granted asylum in Spain or France, only her children who are dependent on her and her husband's care will also be granted asylum. We, the undersigned, urge all Western nations to offer full family asylum for Asiya Bibi, her husband, Ashiq Masih, and all her children, their spouses, and grandchildren. The petition says we also call for similar provisions for their guardian, Joseph Nadim, and his family, who are also deeply under threat. What we believed last Wednesday was an incredibly confident major victory, seemingly has taken a turn for the worst. But let me just share with you this. I believe in a sovereign God. I believe that God was involved in that Supreme Court decision for her release. I believe that God is in sovereign control, though the angry mobs threaten and though the legal system is trying to restrain Asiya Bibi. I believe that our God has a plan for Asiya's freedom and release. So what we need to do is to stay confident, calm, and trust the Lord. Yes, we pray, and yes, we petition, but our God is in control. And Asiya Bibi will be free. I believe that with all of my heart. Though this angry Muslim crowd wants to try to kill her, our God will protect her, and he will encase her with his angels. I believe that. But what we need to do, as I mentioned before, is to stay calm, confident, speak out, and pray for Asiya. This is a very difficult time for her, her husband, and family. And so, Christians, stand with me. We are going to stand, speak out, and pray for this brave Christian woman who right now is facing a very difficult, dark trial after being released from prison. Our God is sovereign, and I believe he has this under his control. So let's please keep praying for Asiya. And on my Facebook page, I will also keep us informed of what's going on. I want to take us to another story that I've been following now for the last week. It is the story of the two Saudi young women from Saudi Arabia that came here to the United States a couple of years ago. And just recently, they disappeared from radar, if you will. Their family here in the United States didn't know what happened to them. Well, just a couple of weeks ago, the two Saudi sisters were found duct taped together in the Hudson River, dead. This is very mysterious, and I want to talk about this with you, but first I want you to hear this special report from CNN on the death of these two Saudi sisters.
Our world lead now, a deadly mystery on the Hudson after the bodies of two sisters from Saudi Arabia were found bound together on the banks of the New York City River. Adding to the mystery of this tragedy is the fact that, according to the New York Times, the Saudi embassy told the sisters' mother that the girls had recently asked for political asylum, apparently so they wouldn't have to go back to Saudi Arabia. CNN's Athena Jones has the story.
A disturbing and bizarre mystery. How did two Saudi sisters, who had been living 250 miles away in Fairfax, Virginia, end up bound together with tape on the banks of the Hudson River in New York?
Seems odd. Seems like an odd way. I'm stunned.
New York police detectives say they have made significant progress in investigating the deaths of 16-year-old Tala Ferreira and her 22-year-old sister, Rotana Ferreira, but so far won't say whether they are treating this as a homicide.
Detectives have been down in Virginia. They've conducted a number of interviews in Virginia, including members of the immediate family, as well as others. And those interviews are really unraveling in some way a piece of the puzzle of, behind the scenes, what was going on in the two young ladies' lives.
The Saudi consulate in New York confirming Tuesday the sisters were Saudi citizens, saying in a statement that the young women were students accompanying their brother in Washington. Tala Ferreira was reported missing from Fairfax, just outside D.C., on August 24th, 2 full months before the sisters' bodies were found. And the New York Times, citing police, reports that the sisters' mother received a call from the Saudi embassy in Washington informing her that her daughters had applied for asylum. This investigation comes just weeks after another Saudi citizen, Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who had also been living in Virginia and was a critic of the Saudi regime, was killed in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul.
Now, the medical examiner is still working to determine the cause of death. Meanwhile, the Saudi consulate in New York says it has hired a lawyer to follow the case, and the State Department and Saudi embassy in Washington are also following this investigation closely. Jake.
Athena Jones, thank you so much.
This is a profoundly mysterious death. My initial reaction when I heard about these two Saudi sisters duct taped together in the river, my first reaction was this most certainly is an honor killing. They had expressed their determination to find political asylum here instead of returning to Saudi Arabia. And my first inclination was the family said, there's no way you're going back, etc. I don't know right now what to believe, but I want to tell you what I do know about this situation, and then I want to comment some more on this. At first, police believed they duct taped themselves somehow together and then leaped off the bridge, but further investigation revealed there was no signs of trauma from that kind of a jump and that kind of a long plunge, so they ruled out anything like that. There was also an eyewitness that said that they saw what he believed were the Ferrer sisters on October 24th at Riverside Park in Manhattan. He said that he saw the two women. They were sitting about 30 feet apart from each other with their heads in their hands and making loud noises, describing like they were praying. And police have said that they have credible sources that say the sisters said they would rather commit suicide then return to Saudi Arabia. So this witness says he thinks he saw them at this location in Riverside Park praying. And that was on the day, October 24th, later on, that their bodies were recovered at the shoreline. Now, in their investigation, talking to their family, they had not seen this pair since November 30th, 2017. What we did find out in the investigation was that in December of last year, they were placed in a Virginia facility, like a domestic violence center, and that the two sisters went there because of abuse allegations in the family. Now, they stayed in this facility until August when they went missing again. Now, the whole reason they were in this domestic abuse center was that they claimed that there was abuse going on. Now, there are some records that also have surfaced that confirmed through Uber that the sisters traveled most of August of this year until they arrived in New York City on September 1st. Now, through credit card records that were discovered, the sisters stayed at expensive hotels and shopped in New York City. They ordered takeout food multiple times. And finally, the credit card they were using became maxed out. And then we have this. We find them duct taped together in the Hudson River. They had applied for asylum here, but they were refused. And so it would seem, based on everything I've shared with you, that possibly these two sisters had lost all hope and despair. Their credit card was maxed out. They were refused asylum here. They knew they were going to have to go back to Saudi Arabia. It is possible that they took their own lives. But that has not been corroborated yet. That has not been determined through the autopsy or any other things. So it is one of those situations where I've been following this story, and the reason I'm following it is I have a connection in Saudi Arabia. For those of you that follow my program, you know I have a good friend named Amna who went missing for a while. A video surfaced of her exposing what her father did to her and abusing her. After she showed this video, she was put in a detention center, according to the reports I had, for abuse allegations, which it turns out this detention center is more like a prison. And finally, after almost a year, back in August, she was released from this prison. I haven't heard from her since then. But I dedicated my recent book to my dear friend Amna because of the situation for women in Saudi Arabia, the deplorable situation. And so when I come across a story like this, my first inclination is honor killing. I don't know if that's the case here. It may not be. But even if it isn't, why would these two sisters not want to go back to Saudi Arabia? Well, it's very simple. Because of the way women are treated there. Now, I want to share with you a very powerful blog written by a political student, a human rights peace activist. Her name is Theobica Felicia, and she works a lot with human rights in Saudi Arabia. And she has written a very powerful blog, and she explains very plainly why someone like these two sisters would not want to return to Saudi Arabia, simply because of the male guardianship law and the way their lives are just oppressed day and night. And so what I thought I would do after talking to you about this story is to read this blog by Theobica Felicia. Recently, the news of Jamal Khashoggi's disappearance and speculated death has been plaguing our news media and social media entities almost every corner of the world for the past 2 weeks now. In brief, Jamal was a Saudi Arabian dissident, author, and well-respected journalist who was a high-profile critic of the Saudi Arabian regime and its governmental authorities. When he disappeared on the 2nd of October in Turkey, Istanbul's Saudi embassy, it caused a shockwave amongst the international community and those who dearly associated with him on a daily basis, such as his friends, colleagues, and most especially his Turkish fiance. Now, she's talking here in this blog about his death, but her point is, here is the international community obsessed with the story of this journalist who was killed. And there are speculation because he spoke out against the reforms going on that somehow the crown prince had him killed. Her point is she's trying to make a larger point, death of this man. She says, the one thing I would like to draw off this tragic event is the international uprising that has recently been sparked by the world. The case of Khashoggi not only received public disdain towards the atrocious action committed by Saudi officials, but the many investment deals that Saudi Arabia lost out on in recent days were as a result of the corporates refusing to be involved in a bloody situation that would have potentially affected public image and controversy. My concern from this stems from the basis that the world has unfortunately proved to Saudi women that they are not worth the effort, the spark, let alone the platform for people to give an ear towards. Despite many of the Saudi women risking their lives on social media platform in their thousands, producing videos and content proving Saudi's injustice towards them and others, the world remained silent and turned the other cheek. Humanity only started to care when it took the death of one prominent Saudi man and personalized it to make it their problem. Because of this, people are now comfortable enough to say, yes, now we believe you and every bad thing Saudi Arabia has done to you. The truth is, the world did not see Saudi women as worth the effort of international spark in comparison to Jamal Khashoggi. The male guardianship law did not hold a value system compared to the disappearance of a Saudi man. Well, maybe it did, but not to the extent of which we are now seeing in terms of the reactions Saudi Arabia is receiving from the international arena because of Jamal's case. It is truly sad, indeed, that women are often the last beings people respond to when they are in need. And by writing this, my intention is not to disrespect the legacy that Jamal Khashoggi has created in this world, but I write this as a woman advocating for Saudi women and having to bear witness on their hard work they've constantly put on the front lines to prove to the world that they are real and in pain, only to be dismissed so easily and so effortlessly as though they weren't worth the effort of concern. Where is the justice with Saudi women and for Saudi women? Her point is, the world was obsessed with the death of this prominent Saudi man, and they should have been. But where is the world when the Saudi women, on a daily basis with videos, are crying out for help, crying out for attention, crying out for justice? Why is the world silent on Saudi women, but alive and full of frenzy with the death of Khashoggi? And I think her point is well taken. And so I say all of this to say this. Maybe now, with the death of this prominent man, the world will begin to listen to the cries and to the pain of Saudi women. On my Facebook page, just a few days ago, I posted a video of a Saudi woman. She's about 52 years old, she says. She's dressed in a niqab. You can't even see her eyes. And she is crying out for help because she is abused physically and emotionally by her family. And that video is there. You can take just a couple of minutes to listen to what this woman has to say. We hear so much about the reforms of the Crown Prince with driving, and maybe that's a positive step in the right direction, but then why are there so many activists who stood up against the driving ban? Why are they still in prison? And so be very careful about surface image change. It may not be what you think it is, because the main reason there is so much oppression in Saudi Arabia, the main reason why these two young girls refused to go back and wanted to find asylum here and ended up dying, the reason is because they're tired of the oppression of the male guardianship law. From birth to death, they have no rights. They have no freedom, and that's a law to be changed along with the driving ban. But that's deeply entrenched in the culture of Saudi Arabia, that a woman does not have rights, does not have the choices that other women have, that they're under the constant supervision of a male from birth to death. And this is why these two beautiful young Saudi women decided in some way, I believe, that if they could not find political asylum and they had no money and no hope left, this could have led to their death. They could have taken their lives. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see with more news reports. But the plight of Saudi women needs to be heard. It needs to be heard loud and clear all over the world. Well, today, new sanctions were leveled against Iran. I want us to take just a couple of minutes to hear what is going on with President Trump and his way of shutting down the financial stability of the Iranian regime to allow the people to uprise and take control. I want you to hear this special report.
Tonight, Iran is bracing for what figures to be a major blow to its already shaky economy. Monday, the U.S. reimposes tough sanctions that were eased during the Iran nuclear deal. State Department correspondent Rich Edson tells us what's in store for next week from the State Department. Good evening, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Brett. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the administration is targeting the core of Iran's economy and essentially exiting its participation in the Iran nuclear deal. On Monday, the U.S. will restore sanctions against Iran's oil, banking, and shipping sectors. The administration says these sanctions will hit 700 individuals, entities, vessels, and aircraft.
It is aimed at depriving the regime of the revenues that it uses to spread death and destruction around the world. Our ultimate aim is to compel Iran to permanently abandon its well-documented outlaw activities and behave as a normal country.
These sanctions will penalize those importing Iran's oil, except eight as-yet-named countries. Officials say they've given these countries more time because they've worked with the administration to reduce their Iranian oil imports. They're expected to include India, Japan, South Korea, and possibly China. Though some Republicans, like Senator Marco Rubio, say they are concerned. Quote, sanctions waivers being given to key purchasers of Iranian oil, most alarmingly China, give Iran a financial reprieve and should be eliminated as soon as possible. Rubio also says the administration must do more to cut Iran from the international finance system and an entity called SWIFT, which helps enable international transactions. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says SWIFT will cut off all sanctioned banks as soon as it's technically possible. Britain, Germany, and France, and the European Union, they're still committed to the Iran nuclear deal. They say the nuclear agreement, quote, provides for the lifting of international sanctions in order to have a positive impact on trade and economic relations with Iran, but most importantly on the lives of the Iranian people. They say they are committed to help conduct business with Iran as allowed under the nuclear agreement and despite U.S. sanctions. Brett?
Rich Edson, live at the State Department. Rich, thank you.
The aim of these sanctions is to drain the financial depository of the Iranian regime, to put them in a desperate situation, and to allow for the people to rise up and overthrow this corrupt, evil regime. As I'm speaking to you about this right now, there's a continued truck strike going on in Iran to drain away their finances. People are closing their retail shops, many of them doing this in protest to the Iranian regime, who continues to funnel their funds and money to Hezbollah and Hamas and to funnel terrorism in Syria. The people are tired. They're disgusted. They're fed up. And the Trump administration is doing this not only just to reverse the Iran deal, because it's a horrible deal, but this is doing this to support the Iranian people. Although sanctions are very hard on all of the people in Iran, this is the only way forward to, at some point in time, bring this regime to their knees and so that the people can once again reclaim their homeland. This is why I'm busy right now helping my dear Iranian friend Manoush Bakhtiari write her first book. It's called Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran. In that book is the story of Manoush's life up until the time she left Iran in 2017 to come to Sweden. It's the story of her troublesome childhood. And I'm not going to reveal what that is because I want you to read it. And then in the book, I will also be writing about how the Trump administration is helping the Iranian people and supporting them. And in the book, we have several articles about political prisoners and protesters who are punished, who are executed, who are tortured daily in prison. And so this is a book of really asking the world to become aware of the Iranian people and to pray for them. It's a book about prayer as well. Dear God, please bring freedom to Iran. And so I will be working on this book throughout the rest of this year, and hopefully, prayerfully, it will be available for publication in January. Please pray for this project. It's so important because this book brings awareness to the world about the Iranian situation. It causes us to read these stories and to pray for the Iranian people. But it also helps my friend Manoush in her immigration interview, because if the immigration board can know that she's a human rights activist, that it would be too dangerous for her to be deported back to Iran, a book like this and the work she does with me will help her case to become strong for staying in Sweden, to be given full citizenship rights and full rights to becoming a citizen there in Sweden. That is my prayer. That's why I'm helping my dear friend in her case. This morning on the Cross in the Desert, I want to talk to you from the heart about truth and about the search for meaning in life. I want to go back to the situation with these two young Saudi women. I want to talk to you just a few minutes again about it, because I think it's so important to understand why they were found dead. I want to talk to you about 16-year-old Tala Faria and 22-year-old Rotan Faria, two sisters. I don't know if they took their life or they were killed. We'll learn later with all the results coming in. But one thing I do know for sure, these are two young girls that grew up in Saudi Arabia. They know firsthand what life is like for women there. They came here to visit their family a few years ago. And as they came here and looked at our culture, our nation, I'm sure they said to each other, here is freedom. Here we can live out our dreams. Here we can be free from the oppression of the male guardianship law. Here we can have a chance to find our dreams and see them come true. And that's why they applied for political asylum. They were desperate. And during their stay here, according to them, they were abused. And they were finally placed in a detention center. At some point in time, they left that detention center and went out to try to live using a credit card. I suppose it's a family credit card. They did what any normal young woman would do: enjoy life as much as possible. Shop, eat, enjoy. And then one day, the funds in that credit card went dry. And then the sisters remembered they had no place to go. They couldn't go back to their family. They certainly didn't want to go back to the detention center. All they wanted was freedom. All they wanted was a chance to live a normal life that young women can live by being here. But there was no hope for them to have a political asylum. They certainly didn't want to go back to their families, because they knew they would be sent back to Saudi Arabia. And they lost all hope. Young people, old people, people like these two Saudi girls were simply looking for life, for the meaning of life. They were looking for freedom. They were looking for hope. They were looking for acceptance and belonging. Philosophers down through the ages have been on a quest for the meaning of life. From Socrates to Plato and many others, the quest to discover what is ultimate reality has consumed the thinking of people for thousands of years. In all of that time, what has the philosophical quest discovered? People have a longing in their heart, a wanting to belong, a wanting to be loved, a desire to be accepted, a desire to be free, a desire to have purpose in life. People have that longing for that. Well, almost 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ, on the night before his crucifixion, made a startling claim to his disciples in regard to the quest for the meaning of life. Jesus declared, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Wow! What a bold declaration. Jesus was saying to his disciples, if you want to know the way, I am the way. If you want to know what truth is, look at me. And if you're on a quest for the meaning of life, come to me. I can just imagine the astonishment on the faces of every philosopher if they were listening to Jesus on that fateful night. They would have many, many questions and would have called Jesus to account for making such a bold statement. They may have asked, "How can you say that? What qualifies you, Jesus, to make such a claim?" Well, that's a fair question. How can Jesus make such a bold statement? Let's take a look at his record. During his earthly ministry, Jesus healed the sick and raised the dead. He showed compassion on the hurting and broken and gave hope to those who were despaired of life. Therefore, Jesus can make the claim, if you want life, life it was meant to be, just come to me. Well, Jesus also exposed false prophets and spent much of his time correcting the religious leaders for misrepresenting the law of God. He never lied. He always spoke the truth. Therefore, Jesus can make the claim that if you want to know the truth, come to me. Last of all, but most important, the claims of Jesus were not just empty words written in a book thousands of years ago to inspire people down through the ages. These claims of Jesus were made the night before he was to die, before he was crucified. The next day, the religious leaders had Jesus tried for blasphemy, for claiming to be God, and he was then nailed to a wooden cross by the Romans. He died an excruciating death, but 3 days later, he rose up from the grave and appeared once again to his disciples. The claims of Jesus were absolutely vindicated by his bodily resurrection from the dead. Jesus is not a dead philosopher, but a living Savior. He not only made these bold claims, but is alive to demonstrate that every single thing he said is true. So, if you were on a journey for the quest for the meaning of life, I invite you to seriously consider the claims of Jesus. They have stood the test of time and have changed the lives of billions of people. I don't know exactly what were in the hearts and minds of Kayla and her sister Rotan. If they were spotted praying, they were probably praying heartfelt prayers, crying out to God for help. Without hope is a sick heart, without purpose or direction. I'm sure they may have been crying out, "God, help us, show us the meaning of life, help us, come to our aid." I want you to hear right now a very special song from a great Christian artist talking about everything I've been speaking to you about in the last few minutes. Here is Michael Sweet and a song called The River.
If you hurt me, I'll take your pain. If your life is dry and weary, I'll bring the rain. If you search me,
Christian artist Michael Sweet and The River. That's who Jesus is. He is a source of living water. He said to the Samaritan woman at the well, "The living water I give you, you will never thirst ever again." And the Samaritan woman said, "Give me this water." He is that living water of hope, of freedom, cleansing, of forgiveness. And yet, I can say these things, and I know they're absolutely true, but we have a problem in our culture called truth decay. What is truth? Well, again, backing up what I'm saying to you, since we've talked about the quest for the meaning of life, philosophers, sages, theologians have debated down through the centuries as to what is truth. If you were to ask a college student right now on any given campus, what is truth? You are bound to receive probably this kind of answer. Everyone has an opinion or preference, to each his own, and whatever I decide is right. Whatever is true for you, that's okay. Well, but 2,000 years ago, and I say this again, standing before Pontius Pilate, Jesus didn't give an opinion or a quote from any of the philosophers. He didn't even quote the rabbis. Instead, he made a startling affirmation of what truth was. He looked Pilate directly in the eyes and declared, "I was born and came into the world to testify to the truth. All who love the truth recognize that what I say is true." Well, Pilate couldn't believe his ears. What does this man, or who does this man think he is? Instead of bowing down in awe and worship, Pilate mocked Christ's declaration, and he scoffingly replied, "Well, what is truth?" Well, that's the mood of our culture. What is truth? To each their own. Everyone has their own preference. Whatever is true for you is true for you, but it may not be true for me, right? You have this all the time. Our culture has carried the same mocking and ridicule about the nature of truth. Truth is irrelevant. Not only what I decide is right. That's the mood of our culture. Casting aside all respect and ridiculing and rebelling against any recognized authority, our culture has abandoned any standard of righteousness, and they've replaced it with their own whims and wishes and own version of what they call the truth. Truth, well, it's been reduced to preference and whatever feels right at the moment. Well, but no wonder there is violence in school, kids killing other kids, kids murdering their parents. When truth is abandoned, we lose our moral compass, our sensitivity, and begin calling what is evil good. The sad lament in the book of Judges was that, quote, everyone was doing what was right in the sight of their own eyes. And as a result, there was moral and spiritual decay, resulting in the judgment of God. Now, earlier in John's gospel, as I quoted to you a few minutes ago, Jesus declared, "I am the way." Three chapters later, Jesus prayed to his Father, "Teach them your word, which is truth." The Bible presents God as a God of truth and integrity. Unfortunately, most of our culture has the cynicism and unbelief of Pilate. What is truth? So I ask you this question as a listener. Do you care about what is true and what is false? Our culture, as I mentioned, is suffering from truth decay. The only remedy to this problem is proclaiming Christ as the truth and affirming that his word is the final authority. So here's my admonition to you. If you want a life of integrity that will stand on a solid foundation when the storms of life hit you, and when all other foundations are crumbling before your eyes, then I urge you, come to Christ, come to Jesus, come to Christ, and be safe and secure in the truth. This is the hope and the freedom and the truth that these two young Saudi sisters were looking for. We have social media. We have at our fingertips the ability to reach out to people all across this world and offer them and support them with the truth. We have the ability at our fingertips to text someone, to support them, to encourage them, to tell them the truth that can change their lives forever. I hope somewhere along the way, before this horrible tragedy, I hope that somehow these two sisters received a text from someone that told them the hope they can find in Jesus. We have the treasure of the gospel. And when there are people like these two Saudi sisters that are broken and hurting, we can talk to them from the heart and persuade them of the hope, the truth, and the life, the forgiveness that is found in Jesus. All it requires is a little of our time and a caring and compassionate heart. Absolute, amazing technology of this internet. We can impact the lives of others with the truth that sets them free. And for all of us that just get on the social media for the fun of it, most of us to air our dirty laundry, let's stop that. Let's use this social media as a conduit for the glorious gospel that will set people free. To the glorious gospel that will reach down into the hearts of two people like these Saudi sisters at the brink of despair and say, don't do this. There is hope and there is freedom in Jesus. After hearing this story, I am now that much more committed in my work among Saudi Arabian women to reach out to them, to post their stories on my Facebook, to do everything I can to be a voice for them. And I'm also a voice for the Iranian people. They are the closest people to me in my heart. I just want to share with you this morning that this hope and this freedom, this life-changing encounter with Jesus is the remedy for your despair. It's the remedy for the forgiveness of sins, to have a right relationship with the God of the universe. Cry out to Jesus. Cry out to him. He claims to be the way and the truth and the life. Come to him. He will take your sins, your burdens. He will take your life. He will give you hope. He will give you a new heart and a new spirit. Come to him. He is that river of living water. I want to say God bless everyone who took the time to listen to the broadcast today. I hope that you have an incredible week. And please pray for the Iranian people. Please pray for the women in Saudi Arabia. I want to leave you once again with this incredible song by Michael Sweet.
If you hurt me, I'll take your pain. If your life is dry and weary, I'll bring the rain. If you